Millions remain without power as frigid Arctic air, snow, and ice blankets much of the central and southern U.S.
In this case, it's proven that Texas is not well equipped for such cold weather. It's been described as an unprecedented freeze.
We'll have the latest on the storm's impact and why Bitcoin surged to a new trading high, plus lean times during Fat Tuesday. It is Tuesday, February 16th. I'm Janet Babin, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. Another 3 months of mortgage relief for homeowners. The Biden administration today extended a federal moratorium on home foreclosures to June 30th. The federal ban on home foreclosures for federally backed mortgages was passed last March after the onset of the pandemic. President Biden extended it for 3 months in January. Today's extension excludes loans guaranteed by Fannie and Freddie, the two government-controlled mortgage companies that back about half of the U.S. mortgage market. The NAACP filed a federal lawsuit today accusing former President Donald Trump and his former personal attorney Rudy Giuliani of conspiring to incite a violent riot at the U.S. Capitol last month. The suit, filed on behalf of Democratic Congressman Benny Thompson of Mississippi, alleges that Trump and Giuliani disenfranchised millions of black voters by attempting to prevent Congress from certifying election results. A Trump spokesman said that the former president, quote, did not incite or conspire to incite any violence at the Capitol on January 6th. Giuliani did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The broader stock market was relatively quiet today, with the major U.S. indices closing mixed. But one area where we did see a lot of action was Bitcoin. The cryptocurrency traded above $50,000 for the first time today, doubling in value in less than 2 months before dropping a bit lower later in the day. Our markets reporter Akani Otani has more on the reasons for the rally.
There have been a number of important things pointing to Bitcoin's favor in the last couple of months. There have been big-time investors like Stanley Druckenmiller and Paul Tudor Jones indicating their support for Bitcoin. And there have been companies like MasterCard, really in the mainstream, indicating that they'll do more to integrate it into their systems. So that's been quite important in terms of why Bitcoin has been rising. But more broadly, if you step back, we've also remained in a deeply low growth, low interest rate environment. And that's been very beneficial for not just Bitcoin, but things like SPACs, IPOs, tech stocks, anything that investors really believe has the potential to deliver robust growth in the future. And so I think the question that we keep returning to is if Bitcoin is another one of those things that's just benefited from this kind of regime, and if it's just a hot fad that will eventually hit some regulatory roadblocks and fizzle out, or if the adoption of Bitcoin by a number of different companies marks a new step in its journey.
And the CEO of Marriott, Arne Sorensen, has died at age 62. Sorensen took over the hotel operator in 2012 and led the company through its 2016 acquisition of Starwood Hotels and Resorts worldwide. The mega deal brought some 30 brands, including the Ritz-Carlton, W Hotels, and the Sheraton, into the Marriott fold. Sorensen announced his diagnosis with stage 2 pancreatic cancer in 2019. But he continued in his role until earlier this month when Lieutenant Stephanie Linartz and Tony Capuano took over the company's day-to-day operations. After the break, a rare winter weather event pummels large swaths of the U.S., causing widespread blackouts and power shortages. Details up next.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Nearly three-quarters of the lower 48 states are under snow cover, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Temperatures are at record lows across much of the central and southern U.S., including places that rarely see this kind of winter weather. Millions are struggling with snow, ice, and frigid cold temperatures, and the resulting power outages and rolling blackouts by power companies. The conditions are especially trying for Texas, which isn't used to such extreme cold. Dallas saw temperatures fall below 10 degrees for the first time since 1996. Catherine Blunt covers renewable energy and utilities for the Wall Street Journal. She's based in Houston and joins us now to talk about this. Catherine, how cold is it in Texas? I understand your own pipes are frozen.
They are frozen solid. But I am fortunate to have power, unlike so many others. It's definitely a very difficult situation, and it remains very cold. It was cold yesterday, and it's sub 20 today as well.
So tell me about these rolling blackouts. Why are they happening, and how unusual are they?
It is rare. It is rare, and these are really quite extraordinary circumstances. So typically what happens is the grid operator is responsible for maintaining a balance between supply and demand on the grid. If those things become misaligned, you could have the possibility of, very widespread blackouts, really grid collapse. And that's an absolute worst case scenario. So in instances in which demand threatens to exceed supply, the grid operator might ask electricity providers to basically preemptively cut power to certain circuits to reduce strain on the system. And in most cases, rare as they may be, electricity providers are able to rotate the outages among customers so that no one is in the dark for too long. But in this case, so much power has to be taken off the system that people have been in the dark for hours because there are certain circuits you can't cut power to because they provide power to hospitals or emergency service providers. And that leaves them with a few other options in how to reduce strain on the system.
Yeah, the thing that's confusing, though, is that Texas is a major power producer. So one would think that the state would be well equipped to handle this higher demand for electricity.
Well, in this case, it's proven that Texas is not well equipped for such cold weather. It's been described as an unprecedented freeze. Certainly, the state has seen cold weather before, but it's been decades since it's been this cold. And what's happening on the grid right now, I would characterize it as kind of an all-of-the-above problem. There's been a lot of talk about the fact that certain, wind turbines were frozen, reducing wind output. And that's true. But really, the crux of the problem here is that a lot of natural gas and coal-fired power plants tripped offline. These plants require water to operate. Their water intake was frozen. It's also been more difficult to move natural gas around the state. It's crimped gas supplies, reducing the amount available for power plants. There was also overnight a nuclear unit tripped offline. I mean, pretty much every generator that was supposed to be producing power has experienced some challenge and a number have fallen off. And that's, created an extraordinary challenge for the grid operator in maintaining that balance of supply and demand, as we were talking about.
Why do the natural gas and coal-fired power plants, and you mentioned the nuclear plant, go offline? Is this a power failure? Is this a failure to prepare, or what is causing this?
The fact that these thermal power plants have experienced such problems raises serious questions about the extent to which they're ready for extreme weather like this. We're trying to get better answers as to what's been done over the last several years to prepare these plants for the possibility of a cold snap like this. Such freezing weather is very uncommon here in Texas. When you think about a cold snap like this, demand for natural gas goes up considerably. And the priority is to get that to homes so that people can heat their homes. And it's reduced the supplies available for natural gas power plants. And Texas has built out a lot of wind power over the last decade or so, and some of those turbines froze. But the renewable energy has both underperformed and overperformed expectations of the grid operator over the last 48 hours or so. So it's not entirely attributable to intermittent renewable energy.
What about a solution? Have you heard any calls for changes to the energy grid and how it's managed going forward?
Certainly, I think that, regulators are going to have to take a close look at what transpired. The grid operator is going to have to take a close look at why, some of this capacity was not available when they'd expected it to be. And, I think that what we're going to see is more stringent guidelines for those who own power plants in making sure that they're ready for an event like this, however rare it may be, because this is an absolute crisis.
Catherine, thank you so much. We hope you're staying safe. Wall Street Journal energy reporter Catherine Blunt.
Thank you very much.
On the subject of extreme weather, the billionaire Bill Gates is touting his plan to fight climate change. He has a new book coming out this month called How to Avoid a Climate Disaster. In it, Gates proposes a variety of solutions that go beyond meatless burgers, electric cars, and solar panels. But in a video interview with WSJ Magazine, Gates reveals what he thinks is the biggest thing people can do to fight climate change.
Well, their political voice is probably at the top of the list. There's a lot of things they buy, you know, cars, meat, variety of products. But because of the government's central role, their speaking out would be the most important thing.
You can check out the full video and read more about Gates and his plan for tackling climate change on WSJ.com. And finally, it is Fat Tuesday, also known as Mardi Gras. It's one of the biggest economic drivers for the city of New Orleans. Last year, health officials determined that Mardi Gras was a super spreader event, with at least 50,000 COVID-19 cases originating from the festivities. So this year, bars are closed, traditional parades have been canceled, and colorful bead tossings are restricted. The muted event is a big loss for local business owners. Our travel reporter Sebastian Modak spoke with local musician Renard Henry for a video about the struggles of small businesses in the Big Easy.
Henry says the gigs he's able to get now pay less than before the pandemic. Recently, he performed with Treme Brass Band outside DBA, a popular Frenchman street club that he used to play inside of.
We're playing in the DBA. We average maybe like $200, $150 with some tips, you know. But nowadays, we're playing outside. We're roughing it up, scrambling like a little $40, $50.
Henry has been able to find work through a Mardi Gras crew that has hired artists and musicians as couriers, house float designers, and more. It's just one example of how the city has come together to help those who have taken the biggest financial hit.
You can view the whole video at WSJ.com. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate us and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Janet Babin, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.